BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Now, part 4 of Vincent van Gogh, The Letters. Van Gogh still hopes to persuade his friend Gauguin to join him in the little yellow house in Arles. Paul Gauguin is played by Julius de Silva and Vincent van Gogh by Mark Rylance.
To Theo van Gogh, Arles, 11th September, 1888. My dear Theo, when Gauguin comes to work with me, well, won't you then give work to two artists who without you would have nothing to do? I'm sure that whether he comes or not, our friendship with him will endure. Ideas for work are coming to me in abundance. I'm going like a painting locomotive. Will my work be worse because by staying in the same place I'll see the seasons come and go on the same subjects? Seeing the same orchards in spring, the same wheat fields in summer, I'll inevitably see my work regularly before me in advance, and by keeping certain studies here to make an ensemble, that will make a calmer body of work for you. I feel that as far as that goes, we're pretty well on the right road.
From Paul Gauguin, Pont-Aven, 26th of September, 1888. My dear Vincent, I'm very late in replying to you, but what can I say? My sickly state and my worries often leave me in a state of prostration in which I sink into inaction. You turn the dagger in the wound when you do all you can to prove to me I must come to the South, given that I'm suffering on account of not being there at this moment. There's no question of me creating a studio in the North, since every day I hope for a sale that will allow me to leave here. I like the way you picture your house and its arrangement, and my mouth is watering to see it. Oh, well, I don't want to think any more about the promised fruit. Waiting for better times weighs on me so horribly. Cordially yours, P. Gauguin.
Arles, 3rd of October, 1888. My dear Gauguin, I must tell you that even while working, I never cease to think about this enterprise of setting up a studio with yourself and me as permanent residents, but which we'd both wish to make into a refuge for our pals at moments when they find themselves at an impasse in their struggle. I believe that if from now on you began to think of yourself as the head of this studio, I believe that then you'll feel relatively consoled for your present misfortunes of penury and illness. Let's be of good heart for the success of our enterprise. Ever yours, Vincent. Ah, 10th or 11th October, 1888. My dear Theo, letter from Gauguin to say that he won't come until the end of the month, that he's been ill, that he dreads the journey. What stupidities, honestly.
Ah, 16th of October, 1888. My dear Theo, at last I'm sending you a little croquis to give you an idea of the direction the work is taking, because today I've gone back to it. My eyes are still tired, but I had a new idea in mind. This time it's simply my bedroom, but the colour has to do the job here. Looking at the painting should rest the mind. The walls are of a pale violet, the floor is of red tiles, the bedstead and the chairs are fresh butter yellow. The sheet and the pillows very bright lemon green, the bedspread scarlet red, the window green, the dressing table orange, the basin blue, the doors lilac, portraits on the wall, and a mirror and a hand towel and some clothes. The shadows, and cast shadows, are removed. It's coloured in flat, plain tints, like Japanese prints. I won't write to you at length because I'm going to start very early tomorrow with the fresh morning light to finish my canvas. Ever yours, Vincent. Arles, 17th October, 1888.
My dear Gauguin, thanks for your letter, and thanks most of all for your promise to come as early as the 20th. I almost envy you this trip, which will show you en passant miles and miles of countryside of different kinds, with autumn splendours. I wrote to you the other day that my vision was strangely tired. Well, I rested for 2 days, and then I got back to work. A canvas of my bedroom, with a simplicity
à la Seurat, in flat tints, but coarsely brushed in full impasto. Anyway, you'll see it with the others, and we'll talk about it. It's beginning to get cold. Perhaps you'll be disillusioned with all if you come at a time when the mistral's blowing. But wait, it's in the long term that the poetry down here soaks in. Au revoir, then. Vincent. Arles, 25th of October, 1888. My dear Theo, as you learned from my telegram, Gauguin arrived in good health. He's naturally very pleased with the sale that you made. He'll probably produce a great deal here. Perhaps I shall too, I hope. I feel, to the point of being mentally crushed and physically drained, the need to produce, precisely because, in short, I have no other means, none, of ever recouping our outlay. But, my dear brother, my debt is so great that when I've paid it, which I think I'll succeed in doing, the hardship of producing paintings will, however, have taken my entire life, and it will seem to me that I haven't lived. For a time I had the slight feeling that I was going to be ill. But Gauguin's arrivals take my mind off it, and after a time you'll have some work. Anyway, let's all be of good heart. Ever yours, Vincent.
From Theo van Gogh, Paris, the 27th of October, 1888. My dear Vincent, now, from your letter I can see that you're ill and you're giving yourself masses of worries. You don't know how you grieve me when you say that you'll have worked so much that you'll feel that you haven't lived. First of all, you are, in fact, living, and in the same way as great men and noblemen. But for pity's sake, let me know in good time, so that I don't feel that you've been in poverty and that you've been ill because you didn't have a crust of bread to live on. I hope that Gauguin's company will be pleasant for you, and that you'll soon recover. More soon, and good handshake. To Gauguin as well. Theo.
Arles, 27th or 28th of October, 1888. My dear Theo, I did know that Gauguin had travelled, but I didn't know he was a seaman, a real sailor. It gives me a tremendous respect for him, and an even more absolute confidence in his personality. Now, we've done some work already, of course. He has an egress on the go, and a big landscape of this region. I did a new study of a sower, the landscape utterly flat, the figures small and blurred. Then I did another study of ploughed field with the stump of an old yew. And that's all. My brain feels tired and dry again. What Gauguin has to say about the tropics seems wonderful to me. There, certainly, is the future of a great renaissance of painting. I regret not being 10 or 20 years younger. I'd certainly go. Now not very likely that I'll move from the coast and the little yellow house here in Arles. In the evening, especially with the gaslight, I like the look of the studio very much, and I believe that we'll bring neighbours and friends here, and that in the evening we'll work as in the daytime, chatting as we do so. Portraits of people lit by gaslight, that's always seemed to me a thing to do. Ever yours, Vincent. Arles, 29th of October, 1888. My dear Theo, now I dare breathe at last with the sale you were able to make for Gauguin. Now that Gauguin has come, the goal has been achieved for the time being. By combining our expenses, he and I, the two of us, won't even spend what living here was costing me just on my own. You'll have my work and a painting by him in addition every month. The house is going very, very well and is becoming not only comfortable but also an artist's house. To Emile Bernard, Arles, 1st or 2nd November, 1888. My dear old Bernard, we've done a great deal of work these past few days, so I've hardly had time to write. Gauguin interests me greatly as a man, greatly. Here, without the slightest doubt, we're in the presence of an unspoiled creature with the instincts of a wild beast. With Gauguin, blood and sex have the edge over ambition, but enough of that. Next, I don't think it will astonish you greatly if I tell you that our discussions are tending to deal with this terrific subject of an association of certain painters. We haven't reached any result yet. I, who have a presentiment of a new world, believe that this new art will have the tropics for its homeland. Now something that will interest you. We've made some excursions in the brothels, and it's likely that we'll eventually go there often to work. At the moment, Gauguin has a canvas in progress of the same night cafe that I also painted, but with figures seen in the brothels. It promises to become a beautiful thing. I'll leave a page for Gauguin, and I shake your hand firmly in thought. Ever yours, Vincent.
Don't listen to Vincent. As you know, he's prone to admire and ditto to be indulgent. His idea about the future of a new generation in the tropics seems absolutely right to me as a painter, and I still intend going back there when I find the funds. A little bit of luck. Who knows? Send news of yourself and all of the pals. Yours, Paul Gauguin.
Arles, 11th of December, 1888. My dear Theo, thank you very much for your letter, for the 100-franc note enclosed. I myself think Gauguin had become a little disheartened by the good town of Arles, by the little yellow house where we work, and above all by me. And indeed, there are bound to be grave difficulties still to overcome here, for him as well as for me. But these difficulties are rather within ourselves than elsewhere. Gauguin is very strong, very creative, but precisely because of that he must have peace. Will he find it elsewhere if he doesn't find it here? I'm waiting, with absolute serenity, for him to make a decision. Good handshake, Vincent.
Arles, December 1888. Paul Gauguin to Theo van Gogh. My dear Theo, I should be obliged if you would send me part of the money for the paintings that have been sold. Taking everything into account, I am obliged to return to Paris. Vincent and I can absolutely not live side by side without trouble as a result of incompatibility of temperament, and both he and I need tranquility for our work. He is a man of remarkable intelligence, whom I greatly respect and whom I leave with regret. But I repeat, it is necessary.
Theo van Gogh to his wife, Jo, Paris, 28th of December, 1888. I found Vincent in the hospital in Arles. The people around him realized from his agitation that for the past few days he had been showing symptoms of that most dreadful illness, of madness. And an attack of fièvre chaude, when he injured himself with a knife, was the reason he was taken to the hospital. Will he remain insane? The doctors think it possible, but daren't yet say for certain. He seemed to be all right for a few minutes when I was with him, but lapsed shortly afterwards into his brooding about philosophy and theology. It was terribly sad being there, because from time to time all his grief would well up inside and he would try to weep, but couldn't. Poor fighter. And poor, poor sufferer. Had he just once found someone to whom he could pour his heart out, it might never have come to this.
And tomorrow, Van Gogh continues to battle his demons. Vincent Van Gogh was played by Mark Rylance, Theo Van Gogh by Joseph Cohen Cole, and Paul Gauguin by Julius De Silva. Vincent Van Gogh, The Letters, was edited by Leo Janssen, Hans Lauten, and Ninka Bakker. The letters were abridged for BBC Radio by Doreen Estel and produced by Emma Harding.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 3 o'clock and time for drama in the shape of that evergreen romance, Lorna Doone. Then Mel Gedroich will be here with the 4 o'clock show, including a tasty recipe for apple cake. In our play by Richard Lumsden later, Morris is haunted by a tragic event. It wasn't his fault, but years later, he still blames himself. The touching story unfolds in flashback and verse in Man in the Moon at 9:15. Now, a classic written in the late 19th century and set in the late 17th. Yesterday we left Carver Doone and John Ridd fighting their first but not their last battle over Lorna Doone. In today's episode, it seems Carver will stop at nothing to have Lorna marry him. And now John finds himself mysteriously summoned to London.
Written by R.D. Blackmore and adapted in 3 episodes for radio by Barry Letts, we present the most popular and enduring of romances, Lorna Doone, starring David Schofield as John Ridd and Alison Pettit as Lorna Doone. Episode 2.
It would have taken 10 king's messengers to get me away from Plover's Barrows without one word to Lorna, but for my sense of the trust his majesty had reposed in me. I had no idea why he should wish to consult me, though my mother was of the opinion that, having heard of my fame in the West Country, he wished to give me a coat of arms.
But Master Stickles, surely an officer holding the king's commission must have some notion of his errand. Why's the king sent for me? Why must I go to London?
You'll learn in good time. My task is merely to fetch you there. I can tell you this, boy. Although the matter does concern the king's peace, your summons comes from His Majesty's Bench of Justices. Indeed, from the Lord Chief Justice himself.
Oh, yes. Judge Jeffreys.
My son, be not afraid. We're not going to skin thee. Only tell all the truth, and all shall be well.
Jeremy Stickle's words were of little comfort to me. As I left old Smiler at Dunster to be returned to his stable, and we hired our mounts on to Bridgewater, from Bridgewater to Bristow, and so on across the country, I grew more and more apprehensive of my coming audience with the notorious and cruel Judge Jeffreys. And when at last we came to Westminster, it became clear that I was to be left to face the coming ordeal alone.
There now. Once you've executed the recognizance for the chief clerk, my task is done.
Recognizance?
This bond, bumpkin, to hold yourself ready and present to give evidence to the Lord Chief Justice when called upon on pain of a heavy fine. Make your mark here.
I can write, sir.
Then write your name, booby.
I'll be gone. There are fair lodgings to be found in the lanes abutting the Strand Road, which leads from Temple Bar to...